Hey everybody, it's Bree Bagwell with your Only Vans Breecap, and today my friend Corey Morrow and his incredible guitar player John Carroll join me on the podcast today in front of a live audience at the 40th anniversary of Music Fest in Steamboat, Colorado. These episodes are special because we get to hear Corey and John play some tunes, including a couple from Corey's latest album, The Letting Go, which is so great and came out in October 2025. We talk a lot about that album, dive into the history of his famous Nashville Sucks t-shirts, and we laugh a lot. We give some much-deserved love to Pat Mansky and the Zone Recording Studio. Also, some love to producer and friend of the pod, Justin Pollard, and the engineer's name on my project in Nashville that I couldn't remember was Chad Carlson. Sorry, Chad. You'll adore Corey and John even more after this chat, if that's possible. And I get the sheep harder joke now, Corey. Went over my head the first time. Thanks, John Dixon and Music Fest, for this opportunity. And if John Carroll has RBF, it's okay if you have it too. Enjoy. Hey, y'all, it's Bree Bagwell. I want to invite you to join me August 12th through 16th in Red River, New Mexico for 8750 Music Festival. This boutique festival features 4 days and four nights of outstanding musical performances across five venues and includes a barbecue cook-off and a red and a green chili cook-off. 3 day passes are on sale now, and your ticket gets you into every show of the festival and includes two free meals. You can get tickets, sign up to compete in the cook-off, and learn more at 8750festival.com. That's 8750festival.com. And use coupon OnlyVans. That's OnlyVans, all caps, no space at checkout to get $10 off your 3 day pass. 8750 Festival, adjust your altitude. By the way, me and producer Kyle, we're both playing at the festival, so you can come see us there.
I never got into it for the business. I got into it for the music and the attention. So I was seeking attention.
Amen.
Yeah, and narcissism with insecurity.
Yeah, that's the theme of this podcast, actually. it really is. We all feel that way.
Yeah, we're totally insecure and completely stuck up. So...
Hey everybody, this is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van.
Oh my gosh, look at this room. You guys, welcome to one of the very few rare live audience tapings of Only Vans podcast. Yeah, with a V, Only Vans. I was telling Corey about it backstage. My producer, Kyle, we call him, he was in the car with me, driving me home in the Sprinter van. He was like, you should just do a podcast. We should just hit record. So we started the podcast just in the front seat of the Sprinter van, and I had the guests in there, and we would just do the podcast. Now I have an RV. We're a little bit more spread out, so it's only RVs, but it's G-rated. Don't worry. It's not OnlyFans. Please... Like Sundance Head last year, he put on his Facebook, I'm doing OnlyFans with Bree Bagwell at 3 p.m. And it was like caused quite a stir. but it's been just one of the most fun things I've ever done in my life is just talking to my friends, which are a lot of times my heroes that I grew up listening to and wanted to be like. And today is no different. And it's really just a little bit of a chit-chat instead of like, how'd you get started? You know, it's like, remember that time we skinny dipped in the pool in Key West? Not Corey Morrow and I did not do that. Let's clarify, that's not what today is about. But a little bit more behind the scenes, and we just found out this last year we are in the top 10% of all podcasts globally, which is pretty exciting. And so if you want to follow, like, subscribe, listen to whole episodes, I got Mickey Brown, Willie Brown, Rick Trevino, Dale Brisby, Max and Heather Stalling. I mean, just really an incredible, like, how many episodes have we? We're at 75 or something. 100 episodes. We don't know. Also, if you want to get drunk and sponsor this podcast, by all means, there's Kyle over there. Thank you guys so much for coming. This is really a treat. I didn't give Corey really any info, and so lucky for you guys, he brought along one of my favorite people. So we make some noise for my friend Corey Morrow, Mr. John Carroll, everybody. Or you don't have to come up now. I mean, you do. No, both of you.
I don't know what's happening. About to pay for something.
Oh, no. Yo, put that closer to my phone. Let's get hey. A little...
Hi.
Hi, friend. Cheers. Friend.
Thanks for clarifying the skinny dipping thing.
Yeah, sorry about that. I You and I don't have that many crazy stories together.
Nope.
Like the first time I ever even met you, somebody told me, this is Corey Morrill, don't ever get in a car with him.
Oh, it was probably Jack Ingram.
Are you like a fast...
I'm a go-fast guy.
Are you still a real fast guy?
No.
Yes.
It's not true. It's not true. That's not true. Not like a... Okay, so comparatively speaking, I'm not... And my son's like, he's going.
Yeah.
I drive a little over the speed limit. I try to keep it at between 5 and 10. There was a lady told me recently she has a cousin or something that's a police officer. And he says, if you're 5, you're fine. If you're 10, you're mine.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, so keep it between 5 and 9. And that rhymes. And so I try to keep it between 5 and 9 over the speed limit.
You know, somewhere between cocaine and Jesus.
Buffer. Yeah. Somewhere between cocaine and Jesus. Yeah. So no, I don't. I used to drive 50 to 100 miles over the speed limit, but I don't do that anymore.
That's like what I heard about you. And it was Jack.
That was when Jack got in the car and I did a burnout and then we went 100 and something and he said, let me out.
But you can't go that fast in a minivan. How? What do you drive now for all those kids?
How dare you? I sold the minivan. We have a Suburban.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I put a turbo on it. So anyway.
But I saw you walking yesterday with all our little kiddos in a row. They're all skiing?
Like ducks.
Like.
Yes, they're all skiing. They're doing really good, too. It started out a little scary. I thought I was going to have to put my daughter into ski school. And then we got on the lift, and I thought, you know what? I can do this. I can daddy daycare this.
You taught them yourself?
Well, I kind of helped. I mean, yeah. I mean, no.
Well,
they took lessons a few years ago, and she just didn't remember. So I took her back up, and I said, okay, let's do pizza and French fries, and let's go over the whole thing. And then somebody in the ski school was watching and noticed that I was doing it wrong, so he came by and said, could I offer some advice? And I said, well, absolutely. And he said, tell her to reach down and like put her hands on her knees. And as soon as she did, everything came together because her weight was distributed properly and she was able to turn and maneuver. And I was like, thank you, sir. Go away.
Yeah. You should have given that advice to your tour manager. Just kidding.
Wait a minute. Where are we going?
Well,
he's no, right out there running a sound.
No, I know.
He's evil eyeing you.
I just meant that he broke a rib.
He
broke a rib.
Golly.
It's
yeah.
Okay.
Well, I did give him that advice. And I think what he did is he went down for his knees and grabbed his ankles and he just went over the top. He went too far and then he broke a rib.
And all of a sudden my audio sounds like terrible because he hates me now for pointing that out. I'm just
kidding. And you started off with skinny dipping and I said grab ankles. This is going sideways real fast.
It is called OnlyFans.
This is OnlyFans with Bree. Thanks, Sundance.
And Sundance. My producer's been wanting to start an OnlyFans about moments that we've had to cut out from the podcast. And if
that'd be funny.
If this is one of them, just let me know. We can cut that out.
Why are there X's on the wall? This is all coming together now.
Oh, yeah.
X.
Oh, no. There's only two X's as far as I can tell.
Two? All right.
I'm just so glad that you're here. You know what's crazy is that I was just looking up where... You know, when I first got into Corey Morrow band, my brothers would go to El Paso because I'm from Las Cruces. They would go to El Paso. That was the closest that Texas country artist came to New Mexico.
County Line Barbecue.
Yes. State Line now.
State Line. That's right. That's right. It was State Line there. That's
right. And they would bring me home autographed copies. And that record was 1997. Corey Morrow band record. I looked it up today.
Wow.
I was... Zero.
I was zero.
How old are you? And I didn't know that's not what we
need. I'm 53. I'll be 54 this year.
Yeah. Are you like me where I have no problem telling people how old I am because I've gotten so much more wise in my... Like, I'm so glad I'm not
and
in
humble.
My 20s anymore. What? And hotter?
And humble.
Oh. Oh. It's just... I'm hotter fit right in there, too. I am the most humble person you'll ever meet.
That's actually. Your best quality.
Yeah.
So you say.
Yeah, exactly. That is so funny. But I'm just saying, I was kind of like, I don't want to be in my 20s anymore. I don't want to even be in my early 30s anymore. I'm so happy with.
It was fun. It was a good time. I enjoyed it. I over enjoyed it. And I have stories to tell about it. And now I'm very glad to be in my 50s. I wish sometimes my body was in its 20s, but, you know, we're working on that.
You're still skiing, though.
Yeah, I know. It's good, right? Yeah. There's really lots of guys my age that aren't skiing, so I'm very happy with that.
Lots of young ones that are breaking ribs.
Wow. Drew, she's just like not going to let up.
Drew, I'm so sorry.
She's not, though, because she won't quit.
And so this last record, what number of record is this? The Letting Go came out last year. I've been jamming it. I jammed it when it came out.
Hang on, I got my manager in it. He's making faces. Oh. I don't know.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
You know, man. I don't know. It's hard because it's like we've lost some things along the way because of the transition and whatnot. But I think studio albums and new music, this is somewhere in like number 10 to 12, somewhere in there. I'd really have to go back and look, but
yeah. It sounds great. Where did you record this one
at? We did this at The Zone in Dripping Springs, and this is my first attempt at producing.
Self-produced?
I did with the band, with the band's assistance, but I'm not going to let them take credit for it, so I did it.
Well, you have an incredible band, and I told Paul, I was like, I'm not going to sit there and gush over Joan Carroll the entire hour, but I could because that man to your right is one of the best living guitar players on the planet, and like that's exactly how all of the good guitar players feel about him. So I think that you're in good. But The Zone is an amazing studio. I'd never been there until this couple months ago. I went
really
there. I've never recorded there. It's incredible.
It's a good place.
Yeah,
I feel like every a studio has got things about it that are awesome and wonderful, and you can feel comfortable in any situation, just like any home that you walk into is. It's specific to each person. You're going to say, I like my shower look like this, or my kitchen feel like this, or my living room, whatever. So you can find comfort in any studio. It's the engineer and the communication that you have with the engineer and how good they are at listening to what you want to get out of everything and the noises and the sounds that you can make. So
yeah, the engineer is a really kind of thing that I didn't know was so important until, you know, you get into recording at really great studios and, now I can't remember the engineer that was on my last record that I loved so much, but I kept doing my scratch vocals and I kept breathing out really hard on Hugh, and I would go, Hugh, and like every time he would just get a piece of paper
Hugh?
And he would write the word Hugh, like Hugh on it, Hugh? And he would hold it up through the vocal booth for me to say it. You know.
Like Hugh Grant? Like
Hugh? Hugh? You know, Hugh, and then just like, Hugh. Because, you know, but that's a good engineer to like, they can hear things that you don't even know that you're doing.
Yes.
And they should get producer credit. I mean, to me, an engineer can make or break a session.
For sure,
for
sure.
Do you remember who that engineer was there?
For me? Yeah, we use Pat Mansky. He's
of course.
He's there at The Zone. It's sort of his place, and he's the guy. But Kevin Zemanski, which is funny because there's Pat Mansky and Kevin Zemanski. Keith Gaddis told me about when I started recording with him, and Kevin Zemanski was the engineer. Keith was saying, he goes, you don't even need a studio. You can record a record in your home as long as you have the right engineer. And we actually did that. The next record that I did after I recorded Nothing Left to Hide with Keith was Vagrants and Kings. And we did that in my home. And Kevin came over and the band came over and they set stuff in my closets all over my house. And except for my bedroom, they left my house so that I could sleep in and be the last one to record every morning. Mm-hmm. Everybody'd be coming in to the house and I'd wake up to them playing music and, I guess I better get up and go to work.
That's so fun. I didn't know that you did that. I think we kind of didn't really even know that we could do stuff like that till
right.
COVID. And then now we have a home studio that we love and we're getting great sounds out of. And,
yeah.
You know, you have to have a really nerdy boyfriend who has great microphones and gear and stuff like that. But now that I found out we can record for free, I'm like, what are you doing today? And he a nice steak dinner. That's what he,
That's your
it's
payment?
Not free, but.
It's a steak dinner?
Like at a fancy restaurant.
Do you give him like a Wagyu or do you go?
Like, don't go too crazy.
You get HEB or
isn't
do you go to
good,
World
but
Market?
Wasn't Pat Mansky good? No, I'm just kidding. I would never say that. He's probably here. I'm sorry.
Well, Drew's here and he's still giving you the evil eye.
Oh, I know. Sorry, Drew. Oh my gosh. I can't see. This is very funny because it is very bright up here. And the last 2 days I've been looking over and talking to Kyle and like giving Kyle notes. And then I realized that that's just a statue
yeah.
of Kyra.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I'm like,
that keeps
Kyle?
Freaking me out.
Yeah.
Like that guy.
Yeah.
And it's
like,
not a person.
Kyle's not very responsive today.
No.
He's like not doing a great job.
And he's very threatening.
Yeah. But okay. I love that you did a full length album because we kind of all did for a minute get into the singles streaming thing, and I love a full-length record that sounds cohesive. And was that something that was important to you, or you just had a lot of songs or like leftover money or what?
We definitely considered just doing a few, and we actually, truth be told, we did record 5 songs with Justin Pollard. He played drums with Pat.
Justin is producing some amazing stuff right now.
And we're still holding on to those. And those are five fantastically sounding songs.
Wait, they're not out. Those
nope,
are
not nope out. We're still holding on to them.
Is he holding on to them? Justin?
No, no, okay. Not at all. No, we have them. And we did that. And then I can't remember how everything played out, but we wanted to do more. And I had like another 10. And so we went in and did those. And I liked, actually, we recorded about 12 or 13 and we kept 10. And that's what this record is 10 of the best 12 or 13 that we did ourselves. And then we still have another 5 that we did with Justin. So we're sort of holding on. I'm not sure how those are going to go, for we're going to release those as 5, sort of like an EP, or how we're going to do it. But I knew I wanted to put out something full length that sort of encapsulated the last however many years it's been, which has been about 6 or 7 years since our last full
since
length
your
record.
Last record
full since our
record.
Last studio record, yeah. Which stinks. We're trying to do it every 2 years. And in 2018, we had the last record, which was Whiskey and Pride. And so we were going to go in 2020 and record again. And we were heading into the studio and everything was on target, and then COVID. And everybody's life just got turned upside down, and ours did as well. And there was a long period of time, several years, where we were kind of hoping and praying that we'd still be able to play music for a living, that wouldn't have to go back and do something else that I didn't want to do to pay the bills. I don't know. I'm going to tell you the same way. So Billy Joe Shaver, he said, somebody asked him, did you ever want to do anything else with your life and besides play music? He goes, yeah, I wanted to work in a sawmill. And he held his hand up and he's missing those fingers. And he goes, but I had to fall back on the music. So anyway, most musicians, you know, want to be musicians, and they would work in a sawmill so that they can become musicians one day. And the fallback is the sawmill, the other way around. But yeah, I think it didn't end up happening. So we kept floating every year, trying to figure out what are we going to do? What are we doing? And we kept being able to make it to the next year. And then things started to get better. And as it got better and better, it was like the years kept piling up, and we're going, oh, we better go in and record some music. And so that's kind of what happened. And here we are.
Yeah. I love that. I mean, I think that what was weird for us is that we make all of, or not all, but we make the bulk of our money touring full time. So
yeah.
When that went away, it's so easy for you to blink and then time goes by and you haven't made a record. Well, you're on the road all the time. But then when that got taken away from us, it's like, well, I can't go make a record because I don't have any income. And then now I just have this feeling that with AI and everybody not knowing what's real, that live music is going to be something that's really unique and important again, because it's what we've been training for our whole life.
Been saying that for a little while, and I was talking to JC Needy about it last night. Hang on, let me pick that name up. I think that it's sort of the last bastion. It's the last thing that we have that's ours that they can't duplicate. I mean, I guess they could, but you coming to the show is the one thing they can't AI fake. It's one of my favorite things in the world that we get to do. As everything changed from CDs to digital, that took away a lot of... I never really looked at what I did as a business. I never got into it for the business. I got into it for the music and the attention. So I was seeking attention.
Amen.
Yeah. And narcissism with insecurity.
Yeah, that's the theme of this podcast, actually. it really is. We all feel that way.
Yeah, or totally insecure and completely stuck up. So... But wanting all that and not really looking at it from a business standpoint, I was very not smart with my finances and would just spend money whenever it needed it, and we'd make things work and patch it together. And now I look at it and from a business standpoint and can look at the way things are going and where income streams are, and we don't make money selling records like we used to. It's just there's no widget, you know, when we go to record, it doesn't go towards the product that we're going to go sell, and then you make the money back and you have your ROI and all those other words that they use in business. And now when we go to make a record, I consider that to be marketing, to get people to come to the live shows, to play the new songs and tell the new next story of what's been happening over the last however many years it's been since they came to a show.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's how I've had to also look at creating content so it doesn't drive me crazy, is that I can't ever track probably if this is going to turn into a ticket sale or a t-shirt sale.
Right.
But perhaps if everything matters, it's all mattering at once and it eventually will kind of turn into something. But it'll drive you a little bit crazy if you dive too much into it. So.
Devil's in the details.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have, Let's play a song because I've
John,
been talking
play us
to
a song
forever. Oh, yeah, me and Corey are gonna go say sorry to Drew and give him a hug. Could you play us a song?
Say something about Drew putting my guitar back here.
Oh yeah, Drew, this guitar is not within arm's grasp of Corey. Corey told me to say that. I would never be that mean to you. God bless him.
She's gonna get an envelope with some white powder on it later. Where'd that come from? What happened? What are we playing, John? Ay, 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 ay. Sorry.
That was a joke you're supposed to make.
We go. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you.
Kyle, edit in some audience laughter at minute 14.
My wife always says, if you're the only one laughing, don't tell the joke again. I said, if I'm the only one laughing, it means I need to try harder.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
So, what's the difference between a Scottish sheepherder, shepherd, and Mick Jagger? You don't know that joke? A sheep herder, you know, like a shepherd. Scott, what's the difference between a Scottish shepherd and Mick Jagger? Mick Jagger said, "Hey, you, get off my cloud." They laughed, John. They laughed. All right, this is a song my buddy Kyle Hutton and I wrote this together. We started writing it together. Anyway, I wrote most of it, but. We were adding on to the house, and they told us we had to move out, and that was not the plan. And so I had to pack everything up in within like a day or two. And so I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm gonna pay for somebody to come do it. And so they did, and they came in. They were just throwing everything into boxes and taping it up, and they weren't even unplugging the lamps, and it was just things were going away. And I realized there was all this stuff.
Are you gonna play the stuff?
Junk, all this junk. So it's called The Stuff.
I love this song.
I ain't saying I don't want to give you the finer things. Car in the drive or the house of your dreams. And I could fill it up with all the things you love. Spend my life trying to make it enough. Feels so good when the cotton is high. You can tell by the way I'm walking. I can't deny feeling oh so fly with a C note in my pocket. Oh, but baby, remember when time tough. We always had enough without the stuff. Way back before the kids were running around this place, we took boats and planes, went on faraway vacations. But then one day, a little line rewrote our song. But man, we still had it all. Feels so good when the cotton is high. You can tell by the way I'm walking. I can't deny feeling oh so fly with a C note in my pocket. Oh, but baby, remember when times got tough. Always had enough without the stuff. Somewhere down the road, I see us rocking in our chairs, just sipping on iced tea and talking about the life we've shared. And all the stuff is gone except the twinkle in your eye. Oh, we had us some fun, but this
tell by the way I'm walking. I can't deny feeling oh so fly with a C-note in my pocket. Oh, but baby, remember when times got tough, we all
is one of my favorites on that record. That song is my favorite on the record, but
Song or the stuff?
No. Yeah, that song. That song.
There's a song called that song.
That song. That song is
this song or confusing, isn't it?
Who's on fourth? My little mentee from Marbridge. She's my friend. She called me. She goes, things are crazy around here. It's like, who's on fourth? It was just such a cute. It's my favorite. But that record sounds very Cory Morrow to me. Like, it makes sense to me that you self-produced it, because do you feel that it is very much you, like in all sense of?
Yeah,
it's very well rounded.
No, thanks. And
I can compliment you more if you want.
Well, I appreciate you knowing that there's a sound. It's like that's obviously something you're trying to do as you get into this and do this for a living. You want there to be something that sounds like you, and as the years go on, people will be able to identify, oh, that's that, whether they like it or they don't like it, they can identify it. And I feel like going back and listening to the old stuff, that it does feel more like me. And I think the just the simple fact that I had my hand in the whole thing, producing it, and wanting to make sure that everything was sounding exactly the way that I was hearing it in my head. And over the years, I talked a little bit about this day. Lloyd Maines was such a great inspiration, such a great mentor to teach us. He produced so many of the records of all the Texas country artists out there. Pat Green, Roger Krieger, Kevin Fowler, I think, and Rainey. Anyway, just a ton of us. And he helped teach me how to speak to musicians, because they speak language I don't speak. I'm more of an entertainer than a musician. And so I don't necessarily speak their language, and I speak in beep boop bop, and they sometimes understand me. So nobody's laughing at any of this stuff. Lloyd, he taught me how to speak to the musicians and get across what was in up here out, and so that they could play it and what I was hearing. And that's been sort of the game changer. And so this was the first attempt at it, and I'm glad you feel like it sounds like that. I let my kids were listening to some of the older stuff, and they tell me, they said, Daddy, your new stuff doesn't sound the same. I was like, well, do you not like it? No, it's not that we don't like it. We just think it's different. And I was like, well, is it different bad? No, it's just different, but we like the old stuff better. Okay, cool.
Well, yeah, and you're always trying to, you know, pivot or keep up, or, you know, you can't write the same beer drinking song 85 times in a row. And I mean, I'm about to release a song about getting older and how as a woman it's different for me than it is for my boyfriend. And I think that's an important song to write. So it's kind of like having that freedom to be able to write the kind of songs and release the kind of songs that you want to write and release is the most beautiful thing. And I have not found a manager that has lasted, that has let me kind of do that. So that's like, what does your team look like right now? You have management. That's great. Obviously giving you the freedom to record the type of art that you want to record. That's lucky, right? I'm sure you've had all kinds of different, watch, they're in like a big fight right now, and it's really awkward for you.
Howdy y'all, it's Bree Bagwell, and I know y'all support the people who support me, so let me tell you about Deep Ellum Brewing Company. Born and raised in Deep Ellum, Texas, Deep Ellum Brewing Company has really made its mark on the beer world. Known for its flagships, Dallas Blonde and Deep Ellum IPA, they put boring beers to shame with a full lineup that's unapologetically not brewed to style. My personal favorite is the Dallas Blonde. It is so easy to drink. I just took it home for the holidays, and my whole family was like, obsessed with this beer. No joke. They drank it all. Thanks a lot, family. So head over to deepellenbrewing.com to open the beer vault and give your fridge what it deserves. And you'll see why love runs deep for Deep Ellen Brewing Company. Available in Texas and Oklahoma, side effects may include severe happiness. Deep Ellen Brewing Company products are for individuals 21 and older, and we encourage drinking responsibly. Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Brie and Whiskey sent you.
Right, sweet. My management and I have been working together for 10 years now, and it's been the best relationship that I've ever had in that capacity. And also, they've become my best friends. And so, we walk through life, we do life together. We all love the Lord. And so that's been like the mainstay, the heart of the whole thing is Jesus. And so that's like the foundation of everything that we do. And being able to get together on the phone and talk about our faith and talk about family and talk about fatherhood and marriage and all these things that are so crucial to our lives and filtering it all through our faith. And then walking into what is going on in the business has been just a beautiful, beautiful blessing. In the last
yeah, that's where I went wrong. My last manager did not love Jesus. Remember him, Kyle? He might have been the devil himself. I don't even know. Have you ever had a publishing deal? Or have you ever done anything like that?
No, I have a story where I went into a publishing office and brought my first record, and it was the first song was The Preacher, and I gave it to them, and they put it in, and they listened to about 10 seconds of it, and then handed it back to me and said, there are too many words.
10 seconds?
Yeah, for real. And she's like, oh, that's too many words. And I'd driven all the way to Nashville, and I was like, that. You're not going to listen to another song? She goes, no. I said, but how about this other? Just listen to one more. She goes, okay. I don't really need to, but okay. I was like, so she played 10 seconds of another song. She goes, yeah, it's just nothing we can work with. I said, okay, cool. So I went home and was sad, and I wrote Nashville Blues.
Yeah.
And then that turned into Nashville Sucks, and we made T-shirts out of it. And I never said Nashville Sucks, I don't think. And then it didn't say that in the song anywhere. And then people just started chanting it, and I was like, oh, yeah, it does. I kind of feel that way, too. So we made, it was just the idea of that lady just going, I don't need you. Not good enough. And so it hurt my feelings, and so making the T-shirt made sense because retaliation and all. And so then 10 years later, I go back up there to the same publishing company to go write with somebody, and she's like, aren't you the guy with the Nashville Sucks guy? And I was like, yeah, she's like, yeah, they can't write with you today. He's busy. I'm just like, oh, cool. That's twice in a lifetime.
Same lady?
Probably.
What's her name? Makes for a good story. Let's talk about it.
Probably isn't, but I'm going to tell the story way. Yeah.
No, that's fine. I've had all kinds of weird things. I had two different record labels that were talking, how they talk about you, like you're not in the room.
Like you're not there?
Yeah. And one of them was like, well, I was 25,
like
26.
Drew? Yes.
Poor Drew. I'm going to make poor Drew shirts. And he said, I'm not going to put 50, 100 grand into her, and she's going to go off and get married and pregnant. And I was like, hello, I'm right here.
What?
I'm sitting right here. And I was too old at 26 when I went to Nashville. But I think, the thing about what you did and what you have done for people like me is that, a lot of times it was like, you need to go to Nashville. That's what you have to do. And then I'm growing up and I'm gathering data about these people that are playing these rooms, and I'm going to watch you guys play, and I'm watching you sell Nashville Sucks T-shirts, and I'm watching you, sell out these rooms and be on tour all the time. And it's like, not to be weird about it, but you guys have really paved that path to create a job for the rest of us to come up, the rest of us really young people to come up behind you and like make money when Nashville tells us no, which it happens a million times a day. But that doesn't mean that you have to throw in the towel, right? There's other options, and that's maybe hitting the road hard, which is not an easy thing to do.
Nope.
We've all been doing it for a long time. But without you guys kind of kicking down that door and opening up these opportunities, people like me wouldn't have a job. So I just want to say thank you.
Very sweet to say that, and 10%, just send that on in.
10% of zero is still zero.
Still zero.
I'm just kidding.
Blood out of a turnip. No. Thank you. That's very sweet. I think... hopefully what comes across in what any of us are doing is that we We love this. We love being able to get up here and play music and tell stories and sing songs and share our perspective of life in the different ways. Like you don't want to keep writing drinking stories, or you can only say I love you in so many different ways. But it's good to keep trying to express these things that we go through, these pieces of life that we all get to share, and express it in a way that comes from you and from your heart and from your mind and from your lips and your vocabulary. And it might resonate a little differently with somebody in the room, and connecting with everybody. And that's why the live shows are so amazing, is being able to connect eye to eye with people. And I love going to the merch table after the show. For me, the connection with everybody who's coming to see us, because we can't do it without them, is that's like all of it for me. I leave the house because I've got five little kids and a beautiful wife and a dog that terrorizes the UPS man. And if I'm going to leave the house and leave them and go on the road for 24 to 48 or however many hours, I want to make sure I'm doing it for something noble and good. And so I've been inspired to just go out and share the name of Jesus from the stage just real quick. Just tell people that they're loved and that's who it is. And then say, I'll be at the merch table after the show. And then just go hang out and wait and see who wants to come up and talk about it. Or they don't even have to talk about that. But I just love meeting everybody who's paid to come see a show and is excited that we're here in town in a room and is willing to pay for me to keep playing golf.
Amen. Do you want to play another song?
Yeah, sure.
Wait, are you a good golfer? Here's the thing. I got to tell you one more thing before you play this song.
We talked earlier about insecurity and narcissism.
Let me tell you about me.
Yeah, let's talk about you for a minute.
Well, just every time that they have these golf tournaments, they have these celebrity golf tournaments, they always put me at like hole number 8 handing out shots or whatever, or doing something like that. And I'm like, I feel bad about it because I see everyone come through, and some of y'all are really good golfers. Some of them are really way worse than me by a lot. So I didn't know this about you. Are you good at it? Right. So I do not need to be at hole number 8 passing out shots at the celebrity golf tournament.
I'm a sandbagger.
I need to get in there. Okay. Yeah. That was it. I took one semester of golfing.
Don't let them push you around.
That's right.
You turn the guitar down a little bit, Drew, with a broken rib. Whoever's running everything. That's great. Thank you. It's hard for him to reach over there.
Oh.
Oh,
no.
So the idea of trying to write something that hadn't been written before is Lloyd Maines, of all people. He's been inspiring and helpful, but he's also somewhat pessimistic. And he said that every song idea is ever... they've all been written. There's no new song ideas. There's no new musical ideas. And so that pissed me off, and I wanted to prove him wrong, and I don't know that we did, but I got together with some of these guys. We had like a little song farm and came up with an idea of top of my heart instead of the bottom of my heart. So the idea is that your heart is like a pitcher of a beer or whatever, and the beer is the love, and your heart, your pitcher is your heart, and if you pour all of your love out onto somebody, then they can see the bottom of the pitcher. And that's loving somebody from the bottom of your heart, just pouring all of your love out. Okay, that made sense. And then I said, okay, well, let's flip it. What does it mean to love somebody from the top of your heart? And I was like, we started kind of thinking about it. I was like, it's a shallow love, where you just dip your fingers in the beer and sprinkle it on them like you're at Catholic Mass. Right? And so, it's all right, I'm Catholic. Anyway, that's where the idea came from.
Top of my heart, a love that's paper thin, and there's nothing to lose when you put nothing in. Now I can hear in the back of my mind those same old voices again, telling the same old story and stealing the hope of this man. Time, but love is patient.
my heart, I've been trying. Lord, help me find the bottom this time. This ground has been tilled by a love whose harvest was always enough. Now I'm learning to live on the things I know fill me up. Now I can see from the top of my heart to the bottom was a long way to go. And divine is the taste of the love that carried my soul. Top of my heart, I've been trying. Lord, help me find the bottom this time.
I have a song called Top of My Heart already.
What's that?
I'm just kidding.
Already wrote one?
No, that joke was 4 minutes too late, and I knew it.
Did somebody else write that? I thought I was just like all creative.
I've never heard that before.
Yes. Yes.
Great job. And I've heard a lot of songs.
Patting myself on the back.
I love it. That's not, where's that one though?
Yeah, that's on another album. I'm not promoting my newest album right now.
I see. No, that's great.
Is that on the, I think that's on the last album.
John Carroll makes funny faces at you, and I haven't deciphered them yet. Sometimes it's like, is he playing? Did he play a wrong note, or what was that face?
Oh yeah, probably.
There's really no telling. I have this severe case of
RBF.
Yes, thank you.
Resting.
Yes. I could face. Be happy as a clam. And just I play.
He's
and I'm
focusing.
Music. I'm happy.
He's focused.
I'm playing, but I'm in it, and my face looks like I hate you, and I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
25 years, he's said I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Corey always comes up to me on stage, and he comes up and messes with me. He goes.
I'll look at the front crowd, the people in the front row, and I go. And then John's like, "Dang, come on!" He sees me out of the corner of his eye. He's like. They come in and she starts laughing.
John, so it is 25 years that you've been playing together.
Six.
26 yeah, on years.
And on and off.
Not the whole time, but...
He took a five-year break.
Really?
I floated between Austin and that place that...
Sucks.
Sort of...
It doesn't. It's a wonderful place. It was it's a concept, the idea... It's a personal vendetta. My feelings were hurt. That's all it is.
No, totally fine. I get it. But were you like doing session work up there? Like,
I kind of wanted to. I was on the road with other people, and
yeah. And you were like, those people are not Corey Morrow.
They paid better, but
I went. I was in town, and I went out with my brother, and we went dove hunting, I was in the brush country with a shotgun in my hand, looking around, going, there's this, plus there's H-E-B and Whataburger here.
Yeah.
And there's not that in Nashville. So, yeah, I'm coming home.
Well, yeah, would you have Kroger and White Castle, right? Yeah. It's not the same.
and a guy that, like, when you're just trying to eat lunch in Nashville and someone comes up is like, are you a songwriter? The waiter's like, are you a songwriter? What's your email address? Like, oh, I just want a chicken sandwich. Like, that's how Nashville is for me. I feel like Nashville has changed a lot where, you know, now all the bachelorette parties, everyone looks like they're a singer now. And it's awesome. Because when I used to go there, I felt like I stick out like a sore thumb, you know, like cowboy hat and whatever. And then everyone's like, oh, you're here trying to make it? It's like, shut up. And then now everyone looks like they're a country star. So I kind of don't mind going to Nashville as much anymore. My whole team's there.
What is the Nashville handshake? Is it, you know, back in the day, the Nashville handshake was like, hey, how's it going? And there's a demo tape, you know. What would it be now?
Yeah.
Oh, demo tape.
QR code.
Yeah. How's it going? Your TikTok handle. Who's in your band now besides John? Do I know this?
Just John.
Great. Are you really just doing acoustic stuff right now?
No.
Oh. I see.
We have
a rotating cast of characters.
That's just me. I'm a rotating cast of characters. We have Michael Terabay on bass. He played with Pat Green and played with Chris Cagle and
he is a giant
others.
Coffee snob, and I love that about him.
Coffee snob, is he?
He drinks tea.
He didn't drink coffee anymore. John and I, poor Drew, John and Drew drink coffee.
What?
No, Drew doesn't drink coffee.
When did T-Bay stop drinking coffee?
Yeah, he drinks tea.
Remember when you brought me a coffee one time at a festival? I was really tired. And
there's a story. Like, remember?
It was so sweet, and you were like, you just brought me a coffee, and then I ran away because I was, like, so nervous to talk to you. I was like, thank you. Thank you.
He probably gave you that face.
Yeah.
I was probably concentrating, not spilling. You thought I was
just a fine line between John constipated and concentrating. Anyway, so
T-Bay is amazing. One of the best.
Michael Terabay on the bass. Right.
And then in the scene.
Tabber Smith on the drums. We have... rotating folks. We have a really wonderful guy who's been with us for a while now, kind of mostly on, sometimes off. Andy Langham plays keyboard. And then we have a really wonderful couple fiddle players, but really the main one is John Janson on fiddle, and he's from the Houston area, and he's as Cajun gets. And the beautiful thing about him is very much the beautiful thing about John is it's a God-given gift. There were no lessons. It was just pick the thing up. It made sense and start playing and watching other people and listening to things and then being able to just do it and knowing, like understanding where the notes are and what each one of these strings is and musically, and there's mathematics to it all. And it's like, it all just computes in his brain and he can, and John's the same way.
He's a fiddle Jedi.
John's a guitar Jedi. So when they're on,
I didn't get any of that from
When they're on stage, I feel like, you know, I'm the Padawan, and it's very nice. Very much the low end of the totem pole on the stage when we have them.
Which is how it should be. I really feel like
Surround yourself with good people.
I love watching your band. You always have a really great band, which is inspiring. And I know that that's something that is always very important to you. It's very important to me too. So I've never seen you have a bad band.
Well. Thanks.
Like, you missed.
You want to make sure that you know if you are going to have a bad night, at least you're surrounded by people that just generally don't have bad nights.
Right.
Right. And so you can sort of lean on them.
John Carolina's worst night.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It's still. Yeah.
No, not true. And then lastly, because I know we've already shot
through
the time, but
Kyle's giving you this.
Kyle's the pirate over there. Is like. I just think that, you know, when I played a show with you at Houston Oaks one time. Do you remember this?
Yes.
And I think y'all just the twins. I can't remember exactly. I don't know.
Do you remember the one we did for the backyard for the birthday with Dean Dillon and the one song? We each played one song. Yeah, and it was...
Well, like, what does Bree Bagwell play when Dean Dillon's going to play one song? Like, he plays the chair, and then you're like, okay, look at me. I just wrote this stupid song about beer. Like, what?
And I felt the same way. You're sitting next to Dean Dillon, and like, everybody play a song, and then Dean's going to play two songs.
Right.
And we're all just sitting there going, yeah. Let me sing a song about drinking, I guess.
Yeah. And then, but he was so kind to us. And I got to write a song with Dean Dillon.
I did too.
You did?
Yes. That was the coolest thing in the world, right?
What is going on with our lives where we get to like have these opportunities to write, you know, with one of
It's amazing.
It was amazing. But you had told me about Sherry and just meeting her and how she was kind of helping you write songs, and you were just very encouraging about my life and what I would find. And it was really an important moment for me, because that I think I was a little bit lost in my life. And now looking back, I kind of know that it's all puzzle pieces that really fall into place when they're supposed to. Yeah. But you do have a way of, you are the most fun person on stage. You have the most fun songs, but you have a way of also really getting in our emotions and being like, hang in there when I've needed it. So I don't need it currently, but maybe someone here.
I love you. I've loved the conversations we've had, and I've loved watching you grow and become who you're becoming. And you're very, very confident and secure and seem very happy in where you are in life. And thank you for having me on today and for letting John and even Drew come onto the show today.
Drew hates us. Do you want to close out with one more song and anything upcoming that I missed? Because this will probably be out in a couple, February. Any big Cormo plans? Please stream the new record, Letting Go. It is just so good. It's just such a good, very Cormo record, and there's something for everybody on there. And I'm just so proud of you for making a great sounding record that you self produced.
Thank you.
That's a great job.
Thank you.
But what are we missing, Ivan?
Ivan, what do we need to do? That's a good idea. God, man, see, this way. Surround yourself with good people.
That is a fun song. And one more time, can you all make some noise for Cormoro? Because, like... And, of course, everyone's favorite guitar player, including my boyfriend's, John Carroll. That's a big compliment, yeah.
Do you want to sing some of this, too? John does his own thing. He has the John Carroll show, and he plays this song in his show. And you wanna sing it with me? He doesn't want to.
No, you sing it.
Wait, you've been doing your own solo stuff. How's
yes, he has.
Going? You just
look. This song. This is about me. Listen.
Oh no!
What a jerk! What
I
story?
The
big hat story?
So, you know, tell them who wrote it.
Okay, so Keith Gaddis wrote this song, and I don't know if you guys know Keith Gaddis, but you should know who Keith Gaddis is. So go check him out. Google him. And he passed away a few years back, and enormous inspiration on so many songwriters and artists, and just the most incredible man. He was just pure beauty and goodness, and he made you feel loved, and every single person that came in contact with him felt like they were his best friend, and that's just what it was. But he wrote this song after hearing a story about Mel Tillis being backstage at a venue, and he'd gotten really, really, really drunk. And Mel Tillis, if you'll remember, had a stutter, and Coca-Cola Cowboy and some other big hits. Anyway, they came backstage and they said, "Hey, Mel, it's 5 minutes to show." And he had found this gigantic sombrero backstage wherever he was, and he'd put it on, and he was just hammered sitting there with this hat on. And he goes, "Will you do it?" He says,
"No, I won't be going on tonight.
No show.
You see, I got the big hat on."
So apparently having on the big hat means you are hammered drunk. So there it is. There's a whole other story about that.
It's all downhill, the truckers say. Little white pills will help you roll for days. I got the big hat on tonight, and I'm feeling pretty good. Stars are shining bright, Hollywood. I feel alright. I feel alright.
big hat on tonight. I got the big hat on tonight. I got a bungalow at the chateau, and it's good to be king. I got a silver flask, I got girls in back of my long stretch limousine.
Cue that house music, my friend. I'm so sorry. Don't hate me. Okay, bye.
He hates me.